kind of transport. Da reicht jetzt die Wirtschaft, wenn man will.
I'm not with a member of the committee.
I am Eleni Duma, member of the committee.
Yes, well, that's an opposition member of the committee.
I am then a member of the committee.
I give to the president of Kabua. Thank you very much. We have called this meeting as a result of a letter that I received from Sabor requesting a meeting with the portfolio committee. That letter, we could not on the agenda at the beginning of the year due to the fact that at that time when I received the letter we already put the item on the program of all the full committee that we had to discuss, and I responded by saying that we will find the link during this period, which we managed to find. And I'm sorry that we delayed in
I would like to thank you for giving us this opportunity. I will hand over to Professor Jackie Walters to do presentation too. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for this opportunity. What we propose to do is to present you with an overview of the financial issues experienced by the bus operators. There was a document circulated to you about 2 weeks ago, and we've updated the document. We've got copies in the front here. That's the same as this version that I'm going to discuss with you on the screen. The industry is critical for South Africa. It's one of the major modes of transport for commuters to use to and from work mostly. And the national of its services is subsidized like many and most other public transport services throughout the world. It's the second largest mode of transport, second to the dentistry, and fulfills a critical role in balancing the demand and also the pricing systems within the public transport system. What I'd like to do is take you through the background of issues that we experienced and focus on two or three areas that we would like to bring to your attention, and hopefully we can resolve that as we go forward in the months to come. So that would use a background to the industry and its problems. Then the overview of the Division of Revenue Act, and I'm sure the committee is very familiar with the Division of Revenue Act, but we'd like to discuss the impact of this act on the industry, maybe the unintended consequences of this act, and then why the industry is not coping financially, and then to provide options as we see the way forward, and that concludes the presentation. It will take about 45 minutes, depending on some questions in between. I don't want to take questions in between. It is government policy, the DOT's policy, and also general government policy, to grow affordable, accessible, and safe public transport operations in the country. As we see, these supporting documents, like the White Paper National Transport Policy of 1996, the Moving South Africa Strategy, which gave more meaning to the vision statements of the White Paper and the meaning of amongst other public transport, the National Land Transport Transition Act of 1999, and then the two Department of Transport Strategy documents that talks about how to improve the public transport system in the country. And those are currently being implemented by ways of the VRT systems, amongst other. And then lastly, the National Land Transport Act of 2009. And all of these documents talk back to the White Paper objectives, which I'm not going to cover here, but implicit it means that looking at affordable, accessible, safe public transport operations in the country. Despite these objectives that we've added in these documents, the commuter bus industry is grasping in front of our eyes. It may not be visible as you see it around the different cities of South Africa, the provinces, but below the surface, companies are under stress, financial stress, and I'd like to highlight this afternoon. The industry that I'm talking about consists of both private companies and public GM companies, all members of SABOA, but also the non-members, which are the minority. We represent by far the largest majority of companies in South Africa. So it consists of publicly owned and private, and all have equal amounts of stress currently due to the maybe unintended impact intentions of the Division of Revenue Act. As you would know from the white paper and also subsequent policy documents, it is government policy to contract public transport services, and if it's subsidized, it has to be contracted. This is supposed to be to provide industry financial stability, so the operators can plan over a 7-year period, and the latest legislation, the NLTA, 7+5 years, is operating meets certain performance criteria. We are experiencing currently exactly the opposite, in that most companies are in serious financial difficulties due to externalities beyond their sphere of control. There are different types of contracts in the industry. We have, in 1997, the Department of Transport concluded what we call interim contracts with all operators that were subsidized. And these interim contracts were supposed to be in place for 3 years, after which they would have been transformed into competitive tendering and negotiated contracts. Now, some of these contracts are now 17 years old. They've not been transformed, they've not been put out to tender, they've not been recontracted. And nor has the service areas which operate been amended to cater for the influx of people, growth of the urban environment, and so on. Operators have also been on unreasonable and month-to-month contracts, and must appreciate that military companies operate hundreds of buses, in some cases nearly 2,000 buses, but they're on month-to-month contracts. And lately, only last 6 months or so, on 6 month extension. And nowhere in the world have we come across a situation where it's expected of a service provider to provide services on a month-to-month basis, employ thousands of people, invest in the fleet, and offer services in a reliable manner, and also store the basic assets. This has been going on for 11 years now. All the contracts that were concluded in between 1997 and 2003, those that expired were just renewed on a month-to-month basis. They're not retained or renegotiated at this point in time. Since 2001, about 13 years, no expansions of the system has been allowed. And I stress here, we're talking about the system as managed by the Department of Transport by the provinces. We're not talking about municipal service from municipal players. We're talking about basically here the contracting system as developed by the Department of Transport, funded by the Department of Transport by the provinces. So no expansion of the system despite significant in-migration. I'll show you some figures a bit later on the presentation about how, for instance, Gauteng and Western Cape has grown based on the 2011 census. These are Lux contracts. I don't expect you to go through them in detail, but just suffice to say that we have these three types of contracts, the interim contracts that concluded in 1997. This is still 6 to 8 cents, more or less, of the subsidy budget for DOT. It could be a few percentages, points up or down. But by far the majority of services are still on what we call interim contracts that should have been contracted within 3 years. Then we have tender contracts, about 28% of the subsidy budget, and then the remaining portion would be negotiated contracts, of which are two forms. But in total, we have about 1,300 buses on negotiated contracts. If you look at the actual contracts, the interim contracts are 59 of these contracts in South Africa. Throughout South Africa, in urban areas and also rural areas of the country, rendering services from the rural areas into the urban areas and also intra-urban services. So 39 interim contracts, and that's 6 to 8 subsidy budget, and then dependent contracts, around 66 of these dependent contracts, between 8% of the subsidy budget, and then 10 negotiated contracts, about 4%. I'll just say what's important here is that if you look at the history of the tendering of the contract, of the subsidy system, it was based on the use pay principle. There was a calculation done to determine how much people can afford to pay for a trip wherever it comes in the country. And then they were compensated by means of subsidy, which I didn't see visibly, but the ticket being discounted for the trip they undertook. So the initial system was all based on the passenger-based subsidies. More passengers and people transported, the more subsidies they could claim. The tender contracts, negotiated contracts, subsidies based on the kilometer basis. So operate tender based on the kilometers that they have to operate, and the fares are prescribed by the authority, and then the government tender is funded. The operator determines the actual cost of operating the system per kilometer, and then the tender will tell you, or the contract will tell you, what you have to transport passengers, and this thing is subsidized on a kilometer basis. So we had two systems up until 2009. One, the interim contracts based on passenger subsidy, and the tender negotiated contracts based on the kilometer subsidy. The objective is to go to kilometer subsidies. Well, we are there already, but it's always been the objective to convert all contracts into kilometer-based services. At the heart of the current financial problem is the negative impact that the Division of Revenue Act, its public transport operations grant, has on the well-being of the industry. I'll elaborate on that. The aims of DORA do not differ too much from some of the aims, and I'll highlight them, but it has, but the general aims were to ring-fence bus subsidies at the provincial level so that others can only spend this budget on subsidizing new services. So ring-fencing, we think, is good. And that the funds are earmarked, so to speak, for the subsidies to service the contracts that the government has with the operators. And all these operators have signed contracts with the government. To limit the evidence of the budget, we cut back to the interim contracts that are based on passenger subsidy basis. The more passenger transport provided the subsidy base. Now, up until 2009, around 2001 and 2009, contract operators on the passenger subsidy could expand the services on existing routes, not extension of routes, but more route blocks, but just on existing routes, and putting more frequencies in more buses to service the demand for those services. And they experienced a significant growth in their passenger numbers in that period, which resulted in more subsidy claims. And then I think the consequence of that would actually be that we had an uncomfortable subsidy budget at the DOT, and that they could not fund this escalation based on what they were getting from Virginia. And then the idea then was to convert all the interim contracts to kilometre-based contracts. And this happened through the Division of Revenue Act requirements, where it was required of the operators on the interim contract, the 39 operators, and on the passenger subsidy base, convert those contracts to an addendum to the interim contract to a kilometre basis. So there were several kilometres that they were operating at that point in time in the network, and they kept the network based on that. So the funds itself were limited to those kilometres. So today, in fact, you'll find that all the contracts that have been negotiated or interim contracts are kilometre-based contracts, which is in line with international experience and not other line. All contract kilometres were then capped for all contract influences following the Division of Revenue Act of 2009, general contracts, negotiated contracts, also interim contracts. Then, in the Division of Revenue Act, you have a three-year rolling budget. So every year this act comes out, you can see within 2 years what the budget would be for these types of contracts. And when it's transferred from the DOT to the provinces, then they fund the contracts based on claims from the operators that they produce the kilometres for the services. What's happening is that Treasury decides what the annual door escalation should be. It does get input from the DOT in terms of what it expects the costs on the interest to be, but at the end of the day, they make the decision that this is the escalation that they put into the Division of Revenue Act with the following 2 or 3 years rolling feeders. But very importantly, there was the intention that the provinces will think about the differences when compared to the agreed escalation rate. Each of these contracts has an escalation clause in it that's been agreed to between governments and the industry. And that makes provision for labour costs, fuel costs and CPI, generally speaking, in these contracts. Now, the Division of Revenue Act does not escalate sufficiently according to these escalation clauses in these contracts, and they Treasury expects the provinces to make good on their difference. And I'll stand on this in a few minutes. And part of the problem, as far as DORA is concerned and the industry's view, are statements in Schedule 4A of DORA, a table of bidding which reads allocations to provinces to supplement funding of programs or functions funded from provincial budgets. And then the purpose statement reads to provide supplementary funding towards public transport services provided by the provincial funds. So it's very clear that the intention of the Act is that the provinces must pick up the difference between the escalation clause and what the actual costs are and what they are allocating by DORA. And this is at the heart of the problem that we are bringing to you today. The reality is that provinces claim that they don't have the funds. And in other words, the only funding that's available is by DORA and nothing else, which leaves the industry in a predicament in that the fund's expenses for the services that it's rendering on behalf of the government, provincial governments, Department of Transport, and also the commuters of South Africa. So we're left as the ham and the sandwich, so to speak. In fact, these provinces don't budget for the DOT subsidized commuter services. And this has been, in the next point you'll see, this has been an ongoing debate since I can remember 1986. The previous government withdrew the contracting system and didn't afford it at the local level. I don't want to involve contract system, the bus services to the local level, and the local level to the provinces and local authorities, they haven't got the money. You devolve function with the money and then we'll take the function. And now we have a situation, the function has been devolved from national to provinces in the early 2000s, which is fine initially, because the funds followed the devolvement, and then the funding was transferred via the Division of Revenue Act. And then this gap became more prevalent in that funding from the Treasury did not match the agreed escalation formula or cost basis within the industry. In fact, the last 4 years, the industry Canberra, we have quite a few operators that have labor costs that's around 50% of total operating costs. The fuel cost, on, depending obviously on the diesel price fluctuation, is around 28% in many companies. So these are two major cost components, labor and fuel. If you look at labor costs, the industry has a bargaining council, like all other industries in Africa, where the annual wages and benefits are negotiated between employers and employees. In 2019, escalation was 10%. In 2010-11, 9%. In 2011-12, 8%. In 2012-13, 8.5%. And as you know, we had protracted our strike this year for 3 weeks, longest ever in the history of the industry. Employers could not afford the demands of labor. We had to be to a 10% increase. So if you look at the average labor cost increase, it's more than 9%. It's 8.9% over that period of 4 years, but expect the last year to come to more than 9% on average. So if you look at labor costs for a beginning bus driver, this is where a lot of our costs lie amongst other. You see in January 2008, the driver, beginning bus driver, bottom of the scale, with only 50,076 rand a year. In January 2012, that's a beginning bus driver in the industry earned 72,306 rand a year. That's a 44% increase from an index point of view between January 08 and January 12. And please remember, Chair, that this is one of the largest cost areas within the industry is labor costs, which pretty typical of most companies, not only in our country, but also throughout the world. Labor costs is in a significant share of their total operating costs. Then we have the diesel price. Began in the good old days 4 years ago at 654 per litre diesel, and went up in April this year to 1253 per litre. And if you look at last month, it went up another 88 cents, and now we're facing another 30 cents increase in diesel. But you can see that between January 08 and this time, now, April this year, we're looking probably at a 99% increase in fuel costs. And that represents between 25 and 28% of the operating cost of the company. If you look at maintenance costs, you see an average increase of the years was 7.55% based on the indexes that we've used to calculate this. And we expect it to be more or less the same in this year. Then, maintenance costs, you see the index increase is 33.37% between January 08 and January 12. Significant increase once again. So I mentioned earlier on the escalation clause, that the escalation clause makes provision for two items, fuel and labor, and then the rest would be CPI, consumer price index. So that's the inherent portion of our escalation clause. And you see the average CPI for this period over 4 years, 5.5, I think it'll be around 5.5% for the year to come. The consumer price index went up by 23.9% over a 4 year period. If you look at all these costs together, you'll see significant increases in all the major cost areas of the industry, input cost of the industry. So what happened? As far as DORA is concerned, Division of Revenue Act is concerned, I'm bringing to the table two examples, one of Gauteng, of operators in Gauteng, and then one of Western Cape, being governor of our services. But the same rationale applies to companies throughout South Africa. It's not only these two companies or these two areas. If you look at the 2019, the first year of the Division of Revenue Act, the industry should have received an increase of 10.99%, that abnormal increases in expenditures in the previous year. This is now for interim contract operators. Because of lack of funds, there was actually a reduction of 6% in that year. Throughout the country, 6-7% throughout the country, there wasn't enough money before by Treasury, by the DOT, on the current contract. So all the contracts had to be amended in one way or another. But it wasn't allowed to be amended in most instances to match the funding that's available. So what we actually received is less of this, minus 6%, instead of 10.9%. In 2010-11, 5.1%, and then what we should have received is 2.15%. But the Department of Transport had additional funds available, which they supplemented the actual increases, the dollar increases from their side, to assist the operators. It's always been the Department of Transport's view that they would like to lift something around the CPI in general, these clauses, although the industry would differ from that, because our cost bases are different. Our cost structure does not represent the same as the consumer price index, which is what it says, consumer price index. Ours is more industrial type index. 2011-12, 5% increase versus what we should receive, 6.81% in Gauteng. And then 2012-13, 3.05% versus 9.86. The average here you can see for 4 years is only 1.78%. But what's important here is that if you look at the fares that people pay for a ticket, if a consumer buys a ticket at 10 rand, if a consumer buys a ticket at 6 rand, the actual value is in actual fact 10 rand. So there's a 40% subsidy on average throughout the industry for people tickets. It varies sometimes with higher dependent distances, shorter the distance, the lower the subsidy per ticket, generally speaking. So the consumer wouldn't see that the ticket is subsidized, but it goes back to the kilometer rate of operator itself. Now, 40% of your costs are only estimated 1.78%, where you have inflation or cost pressures within the company of around 8-9%. You can imagine the cost base, the revenue base of your company is not estimated properly, and which causes other problems, and that you have to put in additional fares increases to passengers and more calculated services, nationalized services, and so on. That split is very important. I believe in what I've seen in international studies, that our subsidy portion of the ticket is one of the highest, as well as the lowest in the world, even in some developing countries. That the passengers actually contribute much more in South Africa towards their public transport services than what they contribute in Europe, for instance, North America, Australia, and places like that. So they're really paying a significant portion of that actual value of the ticket themselves. So this is a big problem. We have 1.78%. Increase over that on the 40% portion, where it should have been 7.45%. If you look at Golden Arrow and the Western Cape, as I say, it's different in the two parts of the country. These problems have been its own thing. But in 2019, they received a 6.8% reduction in a subsidy, where they should have received 10.97% increase. And then the same in 2011, 6.5 against 6.67. And 5.35 versus 9.65, 11.12, and 12.30, 4.5 versus 7.41. Why you see the difference here is, of course, dollar, it's equitable share, ratios differ between the different provinces. Some provinces that are highly developed get even less than what the less developed provinces get. But what's important is to remember that in our industry, we have a bargaining council that sets these wages throughout the country. It doesn't discriminate against between different provinces. We pay basically the same for fuel, cost of capital, and so on. So the operators throughout the country experience the same cost pressures, but the dollar doesn't recognize that. Unfortunately, it shares money in a different way than what we expect cost pressures, and passengers the same. Passengers in the urban areas pay relatively more than developed provinces and under less developed provinces. But the same effect, you can see a 2.9% increase there was 8.68% what the company should have received. Now if you look at this graph, just to show graphically, the blue line at the bottom, in 2008 that's where we were, and then in 2009 we experienced this drop of around 6% in subsidy, and then the increases in the blue line, as you can see there, giving us that small increase that we should have received. Then if you look at the red line, that's what we should have received. And the gap, you can see, is increasing. So at the beginning, the gap wasn't as pronounced, but it's growing and it's becoming worse for the operators in terms of operating their services and vending their contractual services with the Department of Transport. So, just once again, the blue line is what we actually received with DORA, and the red line is what we should have received as an industry. But please bear in mind that all these contracts were negotiated and or tendered with government, and the government should honor their contracts. They're not the Division of Revenue Act, nor do they do this at the provincial level. So the PTR CTOG by controls operations grant does not reflect nor take into account the cost increase that bus companies are experiencing in the real world. Passenger fare levels and structures are prescribed by the DOT and provincial departments of transport in these contracts. Each of these contracts, the fare levels, what you can charge your passengers, are determined by the government. It's not us, we don't determine that. The government determines that. The only determination we make is what it will cost us to render those services based on the routes and the networks and the scope of services that we have to render for the government. The fare box income, in other words, is fixed through passenger fare, multiplied by the number of passengers, that gives you your income as an operator. So the fare is prescribed by the authority. And also, I must just mention that there's also a requirement that fares must increase every year at least the CPI rate. That's a government requirement. The PDOG is determined also cost concerning increases in operational costs, with regard to fuel increases, maintenance increases, wage increases, inflation. I point out to you the big difference between stations we have those costs. Then the equalization principle for the reduced funding for operators in more developed provinces. The operators experience the same cost pressures throughout the country. So those operating in developed provinces suffer more, even more, than the other operators in the less developed provinces. And when provinces seek to bus subsidies, it's a national funding matter. They do not have the funds either to fully fund or supplement the current funding levels. And we've been thinking to many provinces about this. And this is just their view. They have no more funds for this. They have other pressing need, housing, education, health services, and so on. So if you look at commuters, what's the impact of all of this on commuters? The current services are inadequate to service the existing and all the pent-up demand for services. Most bus services are pegged at service levels that are not 17 years old. So what you see now is what we had so many years ago. And not allowed to grow our services to meet the needs of the people out there. This also gives us an artificial market share. Artificially low market share, whereas we proved with the infant contract that there was still based on the passenger subsidy, we could grow the industry significantly by rendering more services. We are now pegged. We cannot do that at all. We can't service this end of demand for services. So new markets also not served by commuter bus services and community passengers want to travel by bus. And we have many of them that want to travel but they want services. Fares in such areas would be artificially high. Due to the lack of alternative public transport arrangements in such areas, we've seen the business strike as an example. When the bus services stop in many of the townships, the taxi industry increases its fares significantly, sometimes up to twice what they normally would have charged. And the people are left to face this type of transport cost, but they have to travel. And we feel that it's full stabilization in many areas if you have competing services in the same area. Keep fares reasonable. Some companies also had introduced fare increases in 2013 that were more than twice the inflation rate. In an attempt to recover some of the operational costs due to lack of adequate subsidy increases. This is costly for commuters that depend on bus transport for mobility. As I mentioned earlier on, even if you look at the Health of Travel Survey 2003 and many other studies, also in Gauteng City Regional Observatory, the study recently. People complain about the high cost of public transport. And now we have to add on top of that by going to 15% increase, 30-50% increases in some areas to try and cut some of the input costs. Bus frequencies, other than how many buses you can run on a specific route, do not match, they are fixed, you're not allowed to increase them unless you do it at your own cost. Do not match the demand for services. This causes overloading of buses and overcrowding on such services. And we get many complaints about overcrowding on the services. We also have a situation where the road traffic management organization will pull bus off the road because they're overloaded. But how do you choose to leave these passengers behind or just, when the bus is full already? You have to load these people. All the bus fleets also result in less vital bus services, which can be many passengers through breakdowns. Passengers have to endure a 3-week national strike as we could not afford the increase that they wanted from us. You remember that strike about 2 months ago. impact of Bora on the industry, it is affecting bus replacement programs, which affects in turn bus manufacturing, employment in that industry, and so on. Service level viability has come under pressure with an aging bus fleet. The overloading of current buses to turn on a regular basis has operated about without some peace capacity to deal with this demand. And increased pressure from communities for additional services or to relieve pressure in overcrowded buses have forced many operators to introduce non-subsidized services at great loss. We have one example of a company rendering about 4 million kilometers per year non-subsidized basis. Other areas where 35% of buses running unsubsidized, and we cannot continue with the situation. The financial sustainability of industry is being put under severe pressure, resulting in countries reporting financial losses. I think at the end of the presentation, I'd like just to get some of the companies to respond to the specific areas to what impact has been on their companies as far as they could experience it. So why are we struggling to survive in this situation? Normally in a business, when you are struggling financially, you can grow your business by expanding services rendered or sales, like discounting and so on. You rationalize the services by cutting costs, for instance, when profit margins are under pressure, or you can increase prices, other words, fares, cost inflation, cost increases, for example, fuel to customers to protect profit margins, and other reasons as well. These are the three main ones. The current bus contracting system does not allow us to do this. We can't access those business leaders. We can't grow our services with capped, unless you have your own financial risk. So we can't grow our services at all. We cannot cut our cost significantly because we have contracts that have to honor, which determine what your frequencies are, which services you have to operate, which routes, and what fares you have to charge. But it's all fixed in the contracting system. And we can't increase our fares without approval. Now, this main provincial resistance, I think that's expected because provinces must look after their people living in their province and try and protect them as far as countries are concerned because they depend on public transport. But also we have major consumer resistance as far as this is concerned, and also a lack of propensity to pay for these services. People can't afford these high increases. And we've seen significant reductions in passenger volumes in the areas where we're renting at 15% and 30%, and it's not yet recovered after those increases went in. We can't reduce the scope of services because they're contracts, and contracts with long that they have to operate. They can't cover the costs without current PTOG funding levels. This is as far as borders can go. I'd like to now just move on to other factors that are impacting the industry. The escalation rates that we have in interim contracts are retrospective. It means that you have to operate for a year, and then you get, at April, you get compensated for the increases that you had entire previous year, for labor costs, fuel costs, and CPI. A portion of that, not the full percentage. And some short-term contract extension causes huge uncertainty. If you talk to any financial institution, the industry is seen as a risk. In that we have month-to-month contracts, you don't know whether you have a service in a month's time, or 6 months' time, or a year's time, but you have to fund assets over a 3 to 5 year period. We have changed the origin destination points, which I'll elaborate now on, and we have additional unsubsidized trips that we have offered due to community pressure. If you look at the interim contract, as I've mentioned, it escalates once a year only, and the reason for this is never allergic to carry on for 70 years. It's only allergic to be 3 years, otherwise it's not a signed contract like that. So this takes annually in retrospect. If you look at contracts, this takes monthly, which takes some of the burden and makes the cash flow easier for operators to deal with. And in potential contracts, once a year in retrospect. So if you look at this graph, you see in the black dots there, this is typically what happens every month is an adjustment to defendants and negotiated contracts. Within the gaps, I must mention. And then through the red line, you see an operator has to operate for 12 months from the end of from April to March, and then there's an escalation in retrospect. So the operators have a huge cash flow problem. And they can just imagine just the fuel. Fuel costs alone, how it varies, and how it's going up. I mean, 13 liters compared to 19 liters a number of years ago. And all these fluctuations have to be carried instance, make long-term investment decisions for their businesses and risk, for example, buy new buses, a new bus, commuter bus, or ordinary commuter bus, because if you want 1.5 to 2 million rand today, some of these operators are operating 2,000 buses, and they have to replace them on a regular basis, because you have to have certain age profile, meet contractual conditions. To build new depots, new, a ticket machine, for instance, a contactless ticket machine, cost the region of 50,000 rand per bus. And if you have so many buses, you can just imagine how much this will cost you a treatment within your company. Banks are reluctant to provide funding, which, and because we are seen as a risky industry, it also increases the cost of capital. The ongoing uncertainty about future contracts affects the ability of bus operators to plan for the long term. In fact, capital investment decisions have been imposed to improve service level delivery to passengers. I think many companies within themselves would like to recapitalize fleets, buy new buses, expand their services, render much better services, but you cannot do this in this type of situation where you have short-term contracts and have no certainties to where the company is heading in the next year or two. You can't expect a company to operate like that. Also compelling this is that origin destination points differ from where we were in 1997-2000 when these contracts were all concluded. I'll give you an example. You can see the two circles, the red dots in the middle. Typically, as an example now, you operate from the one end to the other end. So that was based on that's defined in the contract. In other words, each contract has a timetable at the back of it that says this is the need to operate, this is the origin, this destination, these are frequencies, this is the fare job. But if you do last 15 to 17 years, we have huge in-migration in other areas. I mean, we can look at our Pantone, Greater Joburg area, to see how many people have moved into the country and into those provinces. I read in the newspaper today about 5 million Zimbabweans in the country, which is a huge number. Apart from them, we also have other people coming into the country and also migrating from the rural areas into the urban areas. So this is what you're faced with. You see that yellow line, the red arrow in it, represents the original design of the contract and the route definition. But all these areas have expanded outward. So we're connecting people further and further away, they stay further and further away. So from work to home, they travel beyond the original dot to the second dot. And when you go to work, it's just reverse. You have to connect them further and further to get to the same destination. And these services are not amended at all to make provision for that. There's quite a request and a provision for that in the contract. If you can prove to the monitoring company that the monitoring contracts are part of the offer, that there's a need, they will just tell you there's no chance. You can't expand the services. So we must look after the points that are original points in the contracts concluded, say, 15 years ago. So these contracts have been adjusted since their inception. Requests for extra subsidy and additional kilometers have been refused over the LinkedIn route and to extend the service on the same route to new urban areas and newly urbanized people, but there's just no additional kilometers being allowed to do that. Operators are paid for contract kilometers operate a fixed schedule and they must now run additional kilometers at low cost. So in many areas, find operators running services at low cost due to community pressure to operate those services. And very difficult to refuse such demand to servicing an area that's dependent on the services. The problem is going to such extent that most contracts are operating at a loss. And these contracts can't sustain the current form. So if you look at the need for subsidized bus services, apart from the railways available and the taxi industry, we could prove between 2000 and 2009 that there was a major growth, there was a major need for public transport in the country. Because the growth in interim contracts, because they were allowed to grow. Remember, the tenant and negotiated contracts were not allowed to grow. But interim contracts could grow because of a passenger base. And the intention was to convert it to tenant. done study yet, but within 37, we have nearly 19 million people in the Gauteng area. In the Western Cape, we had a growth of 3.9 to 5.8 million. And you find this trend throughout the country, in the urban areas. The rural areas, people are moving in to these urban areas, also people from beyond our borders are moving in. We are not allowed to service, we're not allowed to grow our services, we're not allowed to render our services that's affordable and reliable to the people in the province. But yet you see, if you look at public transport policy, it's government policy to grow public transport, to improve the quality of service, accessibility, affordability, and we're not seeing it in practice. We're not serving those communities, unfortunately. If you look at an emphasis on the National Development Plan of 2030, there's emphasis on more reliable and affordable public transport and better coordination between the various modes of transport, better quality of public transport. And then if you look at the DOT's own household travel survey, which I believe has been completed now, in 2003, pointed to issues such as affordability, safety, accessibility, etc., of public transport. Then you just read through that document. There's amazingly update public transport in general, but also bus services. We also have an interesting household expenditure on food, transport, electricity, water, potential new toll roads, housing things, maybe down here, which necessitates affordable, accessible alternative transport arrangements. If you look at the whole Gauteng Prevent Improvement Program debate in the public, public are telling us there's no public transport, why do we pay for a freeway if we can't depend on it? We don't have alternatives to get to and from work. So, a major issue is funding on this. There's also, as I said, general lack of alternatives to car and walking, and government promises to improve public transport. Now, we have moved, I must say that. We have Gautrain, but it's limited. But many people say it's too expensive. And we have two BRT lines that operate in phase 1A, near Vela and Joburg, and the service here in Cape Town. But what about the rest of the service that really services the majority of the South African population accessing buses and rail services? We're putting billions of rand pieces into BRT systems, billions of rand, and we're ignoring existing services that are deteriorating more and more at transport. Millions of people today, we're not funding, we're not caring about them, but we're building new systems. We're not protecting what we have, we're building new systems, ignoring what we have, and we have the inability to, I think, really focus on the status quo, improve the status quo, until these systems are in place. So it must be a transition from where we are now to where we're going. But billions being spent on BRT systems in the country. And I must just say, we're not against the BRT systems. We think it's an important system. It's good alternative to rail, or heavy rail, or light rail, in high-density corridors. But we have a problem in that the focus is now shifted so firmly on BRTs, and it's shifted away from existing modes of transport. It really fulfills a critical role, especially from the rural areas into the urban areas and the urban mobility context. We also have a major media debate about the public transport. So we need an urgent solution. It's not just the services that we are lending can't carry on like this. It's not commercially sustainable. It calls all those countries to eventually fail to carry on in this direction. It will further compromise service quality, road safety, fleet condition, training of drivers, legal compliance, employment in the industry, employment of people dependent on the industry, and so on. And just as an aside, I'd like to add one additional point, and the simple one that I've now for the DOT. The DOT published four model contracting documents earlier this year. It was created. All four of these documents contain installation clauses for public transport service providers. Doesn't matter whether public companies, private companies, taxis moving into subsidized services, small bus operators moving into subsidized bus services. Doesn't matter where they are in the future. It still has a clause in there that the Media Revenue Act overrides the clause, the escalation clause. And we don't see anybody, whether it's emerging bus operators, taxi operators, and moving to bus business like they're doing in the future, the BRTs, and so on, and enter 7-year contracts under these conditions. Nowhere will you find in government that Treasury will prescribe what the escalation clause will be for a contract building a world cup stadium, or a national road, or a dam, or a hospital, or a school. All these contracts have escalation clauses in them that compensate operators for unforeseen cost increases. But yet, when we offer our services on a contract, for government, for instances, or for government social services, the same or small does not apply. It's only tier 4. So we have 5 options as the industry and as government involved in ensuring affordable, reliable public transport services. More funding must be made available. It's hunting, this hunting master plan. They're looking at maybe some kind of 5-fold increase in the need public transport funding in that province. I don't know where the funds come from it. But if we don't do that, the city will come to a standstill by 2037 if we don't expand public transport services and road systems. We have to find more money. And but also look at the way we spend the money, look at the funding available for BRT systems. Everything's focused there, but nothing on the commuter bus services that transport by far the majority of people in the bus systems in the country, and even in the future, look at the future volumes that these BRTs will carry. If this is not possible, then either the more regulatory increases must be approved and jointly communicated by the operator and the government. This is not the route we would like to go, because our passengers cannot afford the current fares, and we see that when we introduce high fares beyond even inflationary increases like CPI increases, causes a reduction in passenger numbers. People walk, they move closer, whatever alternate arrangements they make, they can't afford these abnormal increases. But we would not like to go there, but it's necessary to have. We'd have to consider cutting out non-subsidized trips. As I've mentioned, the public care operator or private care operator, most of them are operating services at their own cost to service the communities, and they're not getting compensated for these services. The scope of the services must be contained. In other words, there must be an agreement between the governments or provinces and DOT and the industry that on an incremental basis we reduce the services. But then we must increase the rate of grants, otherwise it will serve no purpose. We'd not like to go that route, because it's against, I think, all our intentions, and that is to grow public transport in the country. We want to get the automotive cars into public transport systems so we can decongest the roads and stop building new roads and get people into rail, bus, and improve taxi services. We would like to negotiate longer-term contracts, like 7-year contracts, with government to overcome this shorter month to month, 3 to 6 month type of extensions of contracts. But the big proviso is that you cannot work under the Division of Revenue Act like a transport operation draft. That's so one-sided. You cannot enter into these contracts. You have to have some reasonable cost indexing in that contract. There must be a risk share between government and the operator as far as it's concerned. It can't be a one-way risk only for the operator and nothing for government, as is the case now. There's no risk for the government at this point in time. All this is transferred to the operator must face the communities and the sustainability of its own business. So the way forward, the funding shortfall must be addressed in the short term. It's really a critical issue to bring to you, and I'll show you what we've spoken to you about this in the last 6 months. There's a need to stabilize the industry so it has a vision as to where it's going. To restore faith in its future, and we need clear policy signals, especially financial policy signals, to ensure adequate investments in equipment, infrastructure, and manpower to support government's strategy of improving public transport in the country. We have made this presentation, Madam Chair, to the Department of Transport last in December. The Director General was there, Deputy Director General. We had a solo annual conference where this was presented in an amended form. We have presented this presentation to the National Treasury and the DFT, the combined meeting at the DFT. We presented it to indicate the provincial government, the Minister of Transport, that's the previous minister, not the new one, the National Industry Bargaining Council, for SARTU, and we have presented meetings with the Gauteng MEC Transport, which we have a meeting on Thursday afternoon, as well as the Minister of Finance. We have a technical date, but they received our request for a meeting. This is really a serious matter. It has to be addressed fundamentally. The government's vision to improve public transport and bus industry plays a fundamental role in that. Not only here, but all over the world, bus industry is really a core aspect of the sort of spread that offers lost public transport. But we have to address at least two think we should also review, in our view, the disproportionate attention being paid to major investments in BRP systems and the costs of those systems versus conventional systems. I think we can get much more value for your money investing in the BRP system. I'm not saying we should stop BRTs. What we're saying is that disproportionate attention being paid to BRTs, and they are costly compared to conventional services. And our country, in any case, does not have the type of densities like that in South America. We cannot 18-hour services profitably. It's more limited than South America. So the application of BRTs are probably much more limited in South Africa and internationally, especially in South American cities. So we'd like to put those 3 points to you as points of discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I give to members to ask questions of clarity and make comments, I want to also indicate in this meeting that the small bus operator has also approached us in the past. And they are consistently writing letters like you have done. The same applies to the transport industry. They have also written letters. Although when it comes to proposed solutions, you all differ in terms of what the solution should be. Different political parties here in the portfolio committee have also got different views on what needs to be done regarding this problem. So what you see as a problem, it's not only Samoa. It is seen as a problem by many other structures. It affects different role players differently. And we need to find a solution that will address these issues in a manner that will not hurt anyone in terms of closing down the business, because we feel the service that is provided by the private sector. We define transport as a heartbeat for social and economic development, meaning that where there is no transport infrastructure and there are no transport services, everything comes to an end. Meaning that we have to find solutions to problems that the transport industry is faced with. I will now open an opportunity for members to ask questions.
I think it must be past lunchtime because I seem to be the only one with my hand. Thank you, Professor Walters, for the presentation and for everybody else coming. I think what the chairperson said is quite true. We've had presentations by small bus owners before. We've had a taxi industry also come here. And I think the committee is fairly aware of the fact that South Africa's public transport funding models are not working. I think we've heard that said to us a number of times. I don't know whether anybody disagrees with me, but I think there's common cause on that. I don't think that's debatable. I think we agree that the current funding models don't work. The taxi industry not happy. small bus owners are not happy, and yourselves as the sort of medium and large size bus operators in South Africa are not happy. And what is quite certain is the system has to change. And I agree completely with you that the system has to change. And we don't agree on how to change it. So I think that's where the debate is. I want to ask two questions of clarity and then just make a proposal. Am I right in saying that in 17 years there hasn't been a single additional kilometre of bus routes that have been funded through DORA? That the length of kilometres that have been standardised in South Africa has been the same for 17 years for your bus operations. Am I correct? Okay, so that's the first problem. The first problem is South Africa has changed drastically in 17 years. Clearly, government has got to review, at least review the routes and the subsidies on those routes, because you can't cap the routes in a rapidly urbanizing country like South Africa. So that's the first problem. I mean, I think you can see that clearly. And secondly, obviously, what you're saying is that the subsidies are less and less effective every year because they're making up a smaller and smaller portion of the cost to the bus companies to run. So that clearly is something which must be addressed. So I think the DA at least, anyway, and I think members of the committee agree with you on those basic points. I don't think there's great disagreement on that. The question is what to do next. I mean, the chairperson will have her own view and other members of the committee will have a view, but clearly we should be raising the matter with the Department of Transport and Industry. But I want to ask a question about proposals, and I have two questions. The first one is, if government changed the funding model, would you A, be able to incorporate the technology that is used on the BRT system and which Prasa is proposing to use at the railway stations onto your bus operations so that a common ticketing platform can be introduced? So that's the one question. Can you do that? Because it has cost implications. You've got to go and buy the technology and the software and you've got to implement. Because that's the way Prasa and the BRTs are being encouraged to move. The Johannesburg BRT system has just started implementing the electronic tickets and the commuters are not all happy with it because they haven't got enough spot to top up the tickets and there's problems with it and so on. But anyway, it's going that way. And that integrated ticketing system is something which I think from a commuter point of view and from a political point of view is the right thing to do if it works. And there are some problems, I've said, with it, but if we can get that system to work practically, that's the best way to go. So if you're able to implement that ticketing system, that's the question I have. The same thing is, if this government or a future government change the policy to move to subsidising commuters and not routes, would you be able to cope with that sort of change? It's a radically different model. What you do is say, give me as a commuter 300 rand a month, or whatever the amount is. And I can ride part of the distance on the train, and then I can get on one of your buses and ride part of the distance, and then I can get on a BRT bus and run part of the distance, or whatever. But it does mean that your whole funding model would change. Isn't that a radical departure from where we are now? But if we think into the future, what would work? Would you be able to cope with such a radical change where you can run the bus wherever you like, but the passenger arrives with electronic money on his card and he can spend it on your system, but he can get on and off wherever he wants to, which means that your ticket has to vary and change depending on where you're going and all that sort of thing. Can you do that? And finally, what would be your first prize in the new financial year? you've also given us more than one option in your presentation. But if next year Cabinet said, okay, we have to fix this, what would you like to see as the solution? And I don't think I'm going to agree with you, but I want to hear what your solution is, because maybe you can persuade me. I was persuaded last night to change my mind on a political issue, so maybe I can change my mind here. But what would you like to see as the first prize going forward? Because I'm worried that if all government does is extend the routes and increase the subsidy, 3 years from now we're going to be back to where we are now. Which is why I don't like the model. Government increases the amount of subsidy per kilometre and increases the number of kilometres to cater for new areas, and a couple of years down the line it's still not enough money because inflation is eating into it and all these other costs. And we've had new communities move again. People move. An example is the Maloto Rail Corridor. We have been shopping for the development of a train line. And there seems to be some agreement that that is the best option because of the danger of the road and the number of buses you need to move people from rural areas into Pretoria and Swanee. But actually the numbers of commuters are starting to reduce now because some people have left their homes and moved into shacks that they quickly erected in Pretoria because they're sick and tired riding at 3 o'clock in the morning in those buses. So people move. And if we change the model, if we keep the model the same and just up the price, up the subsidy, and add some more kilometres, you're going to be back here 3 years' time saying it's again stuck. So what would be your first prize? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. We must commend the presentation. It's quite comprehensive. And I know they could have moved beyond what they presented because of time constraints. Because I was trying to listen very attentively on the issue of the public transport that leads to Sabawa, which is the second largest after the deaths in the zone. I think I agree on that one. Secondly, I think they reflect on the white paper, of which there are certain elements which are very good that speaks to them, of which we need to observe. I just want to check from them, because I'm sure this presentation is informed by the census statistics to a well-searched approach for South Africa. South Africa is a very interesting country, both urban and rural. And I'm just looking at the contracts that they have. Very interesting. Also, three different contracts. And they move towards a particular approach of the kilometer-based system rather than this that they have, has been alluded by the presenter. Now, surely South Africa will not need one approach to fix the problem. It can't be one size fits all approach to cover this subject. We would also like to do a business approach in dealing with this matter. It needs a comprehensive approach in fixing the problem so that nobody is unaddressed like now what is obtaining in terms of the presentation. The question also that they raised, the question of ring-fencing finances so that there is surety and stability and long-term planning. I think this is coming very clear to me. The issue of pressure also does come. I'm coming with my the question of the division of revenue through treasure has also been raised here. The expectation versus the reality that is obtaining from the commons. Because this issue of underfunding versus the reality, which one-sided approach, I think has raised a very sharp. I'm listening attentively to those matters. I'm just trying to see how best to guide, because all I look at in terms of the wave ones, about the 5 points that you're raising.
constraints that Torah is putting on the industry. In fact, it speaks to the even to the share, because we have to also to look into the boss. Once we get to the share, we are talking to also to move kind of the human beings in terms of subsidy and so on, which led to the matter of the rate per kilometer. I always said per passenger for that matter. I just qualify that for my own understanding. And then the road banks are paid in assisting. In fact, they are not assisting because it's a high risk industry that they are involved in. So they can't assist if our approach is on the three different fund models in terms of contract, month to month, negotiated, and so on. So nobody will want to get into that. The escalation costs. Now, Chairperson, you see, out of these that I've just raised, let alone the cost on proportionate investment vis-à-vis the PRT, another argument. I am not sure whether Chairperson should we have a deeper discussion on the matter. So that everybody, you see, if we as we hear that on that, we can't fix a problem now and say down the line we are back in square or we are very worse off. What you have. I know this problem. You know, if you talk rural passes to be subsidized and they are not getting assistance in the manner in which, because in fact, passes are shrinking in those areas. Now, it means and the infrastructure does not allow those passes to be sustained over a period of, I know that the top 17 years is more than that. Now, it means we need to have an in-depth discussion. Either as a proposal, I'm just being allowed now, for a real serious endeavor on this industry of yours, so that we bring all the necessary relevant stakeholders, starting from treasury, the personal reserve, the person, because whatever we say, it will go back to the person. And the implementers, the Department of Transport, also the private sector. Otherwise, the constraints and the frustration. Though you would be very nice, I'm from that particular province. They are very serious and they are very robust when they come to this matter of asphalt. And we compare them to tech industry or to the rail industry. Where do you stand? You are almost nowhere. And there is no proof even to the small part operators or owners. So it's a bigger challenge that we are presented here today. And it needs some serious minds to think deeper than what we are being presented here. And maybe we need to have serious, sustainable solutions on the mat. So I'm saying, Jefferson, I sympathize with the secretary here, but surely the committee will have to sit down and reflect, because you are not looking at the particular problems, you are looking at some problems like 51. 50 million people, how to save them. Because also the moving patterns that you've spoken to, from rural to urban, and urban to metros and so on, and what are our research saying in that regard, in as far as transport is concerned in passing, was the steep competition. While talking of support, the rail, Rasa, is also pushing himself for the same clients. Yeah? So I'm saying we need to have a much more in-depth discussion, but it should not take so long for us to meet and have a particular problems. Look at what paper, how long does it take to come to fruition? 2013 we are referring still to it, of 19 months, I was not here at that time. So I'm saying we need to move with a little bit of speed and need to move with a little bit of urgency on the matter that has been presented here. We might not be bringing solutions standing on our feet as we have been presented now. It needs us also to sit down and analyze what has been said, notwithstanding what has been raised by my colleague, trying to find also some clarity questions. I once, my last point, check, I wanted a client on a small matter, I did not capture it very well. requirements of Torah. That is the eyesight. Can I just clarify so that I get you in terms of your 100 plus business, in business terms, of what is expected by treasure, because we talk of Torah in that regard. So that when also we raise the business matter of this system, we need to be clear of what we want to achieve or what you want out of this. I know the assistance is not that much, and I know what you've been raising in your request, but I think we need to get more than what we've raised here, so that when we raise these matters, we are very sure. In the meantime, we will not wait for that, because sure, in the meantime, there should be solutions found on what you've raised, because we have to categorize also this problem on a long-term, medium, and indeed, in terms of the pressure that we're having for the sustenance of the business, so that we don't collapse. And I can see that they are collapsing. One area of focus, my new year, at a particular stage, they had so many buses. They stream to 30, I'm not sure whether they're still at that level, maybe now they're 6. And those buses have to travel on very awkward roads and so on. So I'm saying, let alone the payment, I want to also check the per annum, 50,000 per annum, 72,000 per annum. But I know you can't do other than that because your run costs are too high to sustain, and the demand, the labor is also too much. I've noted that. I'm saying, can I just get this issue of the expectation in terms of the door? Thank you, Chairperson. Otherwise, we'll apply our minds when you are, so that the committee, otherwise, we'll be listening very attentively to what we would read. Thank you.
Before you respond, I would want to also add on how I think it should be approaching this issue. So that in your response, you will also take that into consideration. In making that input, I would also ask questions, specific questions that I would want you to respond to if you can today, or sleep over them and think about those questions and on how you would respond to them in the future. The first question that I would want to ask, I'm not expecting it, is whether you are thinking out of the box or in the box, in the solution that you might propose. I'm asking that question because you are part of the transport family. You are not operating in isolation. And there is a national development plan that you then need to take into consideration when you're making proposals. There's also an integrated transport plan to integrate all the modes of transport, which again means you have to think inside when you're making your proposal. Don't think of the if I were you, I would not make the proposal that are only defining me as a past parent. In late 70s and early 80s, I started marketing as part of my community development training. And we were presented with an assignment to analyze what made railway transport to fail. vision of railway transport in South Africa. What is it that railway transport has that Australia is doing in South Africa? And what then made the railway transportation to fail in South Africa? I got because my analysis was that railway transportation failed to define the nature of business that we were in. They saw themselves as railway transport. They did not see themselves as people that were providing transport. And they were just looking at themselves as a railway transport. And in railway transport, there were buses that were traveling once in the morning and in the afternoon. And part of the work that, part of the service that they were doing, they were collecting the postmen, spending more time collecting a post bag instead of shortening the distance of a passenger. So they were delaying the passengers because they were combining transporting people with the delivery of letter collecting among the those who grew up in rural areas would remember that thing, that it would take you traveling from Harding to Pochester more than 4 hours because the bus had to exit the main road to go and collect a post box and come back. And thus they were doing that. The taxi, the illegal taxi operator, and my brother was one of them, saw an opportunity that there would be people who would want to take their children to the doctor and cover time so that your child doesn't die while you are sitting in a bus that is busy collecting the post bag. Now, I am asking this question because you need to think out of the box because the country is evolving and there is a future direction that we need to respond to, not to the current situation that is facing. I'm not saying that your current situation is not important, but the solution to your current situation does not necessarily have to speak to the current situation only. They also have to look at the future direction. I'm saying this because in your presentation you are mentioning the VRT. You are not mentioning the introduction of fast trains in South Africa, which in my view is more of a threat than the VRT. Because the person who takes 3 hours using a bus would not want to remain in a bus when there is a train that can only take 30 minutes to cover a distance that bank takes 3 hours to cover. And if I was in your position, I would be asking a question that says, who are going to be the operators of the high-speed train? And what role can I play in? Rather than to say it coming and do nothing about it. So, I'm asking that question because I also in my other area of study, again, community development, An association is the first step of a cooperative. But funny enough, in South Africa, we don't do that. And the difference between a private company and a cooperative is that when private companies are not able to make profit, they run to the government for a bailout. Cooperatives, when they see that something is expensive, which it's they are using it, they establish a secondary cooperative and provide themselves with that service. So a cooperative would not say petrol is expensive, fuel is expensive. The cooperative, primary co-op would say fuel is expensive, I am not going to buy fuel from another person. I am going to supply myself with fuel and then sell to the secondary cooperative. That's why countries that have got strong cooperatives are not affected by financial crisis. If you want to test that, go and read how Mondragon, which is in Spain, was affected by the recent financial crisis. They were not affected much because cooperatives operate differently from governments. They establish their own value chain and they make sure that the money rotates amongst them. In the private companies, that is not the case. If a company, a private company is like you are operating buses, you will not think of how you can reduce the cost of fuel that you are consuming every day. Which is coming back to the very same question that was asked by Honorable audience, saying, in South Africa, if a new system, a single ticket system is introduced, think of how it would affect you. Because in your presentation, you have also mentioned the ticketing system. And that single ticket system immediately takes that cost away if it is introduced. Because you must be required a single different move to have your own ticketing system that has got its own cost. But you will be sharing a single ticketing system. So think of that. All I am saying is that yes, you have presented solutions, but you have presented solutions that are looking, you are only looking at you as bus operators, you are not looking at you as yourself. As you are not dividing your business correctly. You are not in transportation. You are in operating buses, and your solutions then are limited to bus operators, not people who are in transportation business, who can even turn a bus rank into an economic hub. When you are in transportation, you will think of that way. But because you are only thinking of yourself as bus operator, then the solution is the bus subsidy. I will leave it at that. At this point at the moment, I allow you to respond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to respond. I must just say, Sibowa represents the island and bus companies, large and small, of which the by far the majority are small operators. And they come from the public service, publicly owned companies, as well as privately owned companies. We don't really have private sector companies.
Can I interject here?
Yes.
There are small bus operators that are not part of the
we are
then referring to those who are not including the fact that one does have small bus operators within the
country. No, we acknowledge that there are other associations, but we are the largest in the country, representing a cross-section of public-owned and private-owned bus companies, municipal companies as well as small and large. To come to some of the questions, a lot of questions asked. The industry is in favor of a single ticketing system. It's not a problem to introduce that. But you have to think of how your contracting regime. You have to do it through gross cost contracts. We don't have gross cost contracts. The only gross cost contracts we have is in the first phase of the VRT in Joburg and the one here in Cape Town. The gross cost contract will allow you to amend the routes and to change frequencies on routes with buses and others within the same kilometer, servicing contract for 11 kilometers a month. You can change that based on needs of passengers, additional needs, growth of areas and so on. So there's flexibility in these contracts. If you look internationally, the gross cost contracts dominate in public transport systems throughout the world. Whether it's rail systems or bus systems, they dominate. Because of the flexibility it offers the authority to change systems, routes, frequencies, and so on, as long as the overall kilometers remain more or less the same, and unless they contract additional kilometers in the system. It will be difficult for the industry now to introduce new systems. In light of the fact that we are awaiting independent public transport plans, and maybe I should also respond by thinking out of the box. The industry is a service rendering industry. It depends on what government wants it to do in terms of social services. Government designs the services contract, they design the limited area, they put consultants in, they design the services, and they put those services out of contract. They open tendering or they negotiate. Contract is becoming more and more important throughout the world. But contracting in public transport is the norm today. There is flexibility in it to grow. So in these contracted services, it's normally part of the integrated public transport system. So you find that the ticket that you use on the rail, you can use in the tram, or the ferry, or the bus. In places like London, many cities in Europe, Australia, and so on. We are for that. We have no problem with that. The problem is that these integrated public transport systems are not being developed. The plans are not being developed. There's not a single plan that's in place that can be used anywhere in South Africa to contract public transport services. It's all silo-based. It's modal-based. Our problem is a mode issue. Now, we must still get to the IPTs and a situation where we can render services based on integrated transport plans. But we have to survive to get there. We're still busy. I mean, if you look at the taxi industry, it's a silo-based planning. If you look at metro rail, it's silo-based planning. If you look at the BRT, it's silo. If you look at the urban bus system, it's silo-based planning. There's no integration of services. And there are many reasons for that. My belief is that we don't have proper authorities to deal with this at the super-local level, like you have in most other countries. And secondly, the funding streams are disjointed. You have funding for metro rail. That funds metro rail. They have funding for Joburg Metro Bus Company that funds that service. It doesn't care what's going on in Boksburg or Benoni or the West Rand or somewhere else. The cross movement of people. They have funding for school bus services. The company education part for school bus services. It's not integrated bus services. We are not allowed to travel with those people in our contracts. If you have more than 50% load factor, it's good with the service. So, and our services are based, funding stream enforces the current policy of contracting, which is not integrated. So we're all waiting for these integrated public transport plans, and that's out of the box thinking. We are waiting for government to move. It's not, we are service takers. We render the service based on the requirements of the authority, the frequencies, the types of fares, what level services they want, what type of fare systems they want. We'll respond to that. Like bus operators do, and rail operators do throughout the world. They respond to an authority need. They don't plan these services themselves. So they're responding to these needs, and we are waiting for those services to be developed. But it's not happening. But what do you do in the meantime, between now and when those services are, when those plans are developed and the services are contracted according to the policy, it must be contracted? That's the difficulty that we have as an industry. How do you get there? Will there be something left by the time you get there? The expertise, the infrastructure that you have at this point in time. So, coming to the commuter subsidy, there's been many studies on the use of pay. The DOT, I mean, the CMM in the middle will know about that. The cost of administering a system like that and identifying people that are in need of specific amounts of money is very difficult. It's not that easy. How do you not discriminate against people by giving this person 300 rand and not 700 rand, but that guy travels 80 kilometers, this guy travels 10 kilometers, that passenger? How do you determine that? The administration of those systems has been proven. It's the administration cost of the total subsidy value that you do in that way is between 12 to 15% compared to the current administration value of your contracting system around 4%. So there's a cost in doing that. And secondly, if you have a don't know any system like this anywhere in the world. The systems I'm aware of in developing countries is based on contracting, formal systems, contracting, whether it's rail services or tram services, ferry services, or buses. It's based on contracting. Gross cost contract, not net cost. Net cost contract and in our South Africa. All the bus contracts are net cost. In other words, the revenue risk is with the operator. In gross cost contracts, the revenue risk is with the authority. They plan the services, they set the fares, they take the revenue, but they pay the operator the rate per kilometer. So the revenue risk is with the operator. But you have hybrids between two net cost and gross cost contracts where the risk is shared between. So if the operator grows the service, he shares in the revenue on top of the contract, and where the service is not growing, it doesn't perform as it should, there's a penalty built in. So there are many models around that. So on the ticketing system, between this and now, if you're on month long contracts, 6 months contracts, and now a stage when IRPTN, Integrated Public Transport Plan, is being developed, we don't know what the specifications are within those contracts. There are so many ticketing systems that you can implement. And technology is available internationally. We don't know what authority, whether it's a province or metro authority or a transport executive or whatever they put all these authorities in Gauteng things. We don't know what we're going to describe. So to do that now, it's different. So in the case of PROSA and the BRTs, they'll have to influence the authority to have that system rolled out amongst normal community services as well. Then we will be takers of that technology. We won't be pushing that thing alone. What's first prize? Adherence to contract conditions. I think that's what we'd like to see. That if the contract says there's escalation of 7%, we'd like to see 7% adherence. We get that escalation. Members may also add, I'm sure, different views as well, but there's a short-term and longer-term solution. The problem is to get to the longer-term solution, which is integrated public transport plans. And what do you do in that interim period with these services? We expand on BRTs, and Gautrain, now has to expand Gautrain, but what do you do in the meantime with existing traditional bus services that transport many more people than BRTs and Gautrain and Metro combined? What do you do with those services in the meantime? We have to sustain those services, make sure they are sustainable in going into the future. So the short term is really to get ready to acknowledge that there are contracts that must be honoured with the industry and not push that responsibility onto the provinces, where the provinces say, I don't have the money. And then you leave the industry in the middle, hanging in the middle, rendering a service on contract, which cannot deviate from, because it's contractually agreed. And then, throw your hands in the air and say, sorry, you must carry on rendering these services, but we haven't got the money, but do it. We don't potentially put you down to cut back your services. It doesn't work like that. It's like a dam. You can have a sluice gate at the dam, and you've got a full dam, and you open the sluice gate, and you open it so wide that more water flows out of the dam and flowing into the water. There won't be a dam at the end of the day. There won't be a dam of water at the end of the day. And the business is exactly like that. We all have our personal incomes every month. You spend more than what you earn. You go bankrupt. And this is the same with any company. And to deal with that, we need to do that in the short term, but also fundamentally in the long term, because the four contracts that are being proposed, the contracting regime for the gross cost contracts and net cost contracts, by the DOT includes BORA. It doesn't address this issue fundamentally. So to answer the gentleman's question on DORA, the problem with DORA is it does not even acknowledge CPI. It's not in line with CPI, DORA escalation. It's not in line with the escalations that we have in our contracts. I don't know how they determine that percentage. So there's no rationale in our view for how Treasury determines what this escalation is going to be. Madam Chair, I just want to answer. I know you said you must go home and think about this, but thinking in and out of the box, I think a company can within itself think out of the box how it wants to manage its business, run its affairs, replace fleets, type of buses to acquire, and so on. But the industry is dependent on government to determine the services that it has to render on behalf of government, with publicly owned or privately owned company. It cannot go and render services on its own because the service costs are much more than what the users can pay for those services, and they would subsidize. And subsidize is a government policy that has to be contracted. contract is based on certain conditions. If you look at the model of contract documents, it's very voluminous and very complex. And those are the conditions in which we operate our services. Like any service provided to government, they render the service based on the contract conditions. If you contract something like Mario Roberts World Cup Stadium, you specify every little bit of work that they have to do to construct that stadium. And then you sign off on the completed project. The license is not different. The license is not different nationally or internationally. You render services based on certain conditions and requirements, and if you don't meet those conditions, you'll be
wrong. I think you didn't get the point I was making.
True.
The point I was making was taken out of the box in relation to the National Development Plan. And the future direction of the country, the introduction of fat trains in the country, and the integrated transport system. Those things are there now, as we speak.
And we support them. We support the transport.
All I am saying is that within that context, we then need to make proposals that relate to that and position yourself. Which is why I then had to make an example of the assignment that we were given to analyze railway transportation. Because in your presentation, you are only looking at yourself as bus operator. That is the point I was making. I see you shaking your head, gentlemen. No, the one next to you.
But yeah, I am shaking my head. I think the one thing that hopefully the portfolio committee will understand is that the industry, I think that was the point that Professor Jackson was making, the industry can only operate within the rules and on the playing field that is created by government. And within those parameters, there are only a limited number of options that we have to manage our company. And it is not possible for the industry to set the rules, to create the environment, and to create a different environment where we need to operate in. I know that South Africa has had a very checkered career, and some of the problems that we see today, we've seen those before. And if I just use Cape Town, where we operate, as an example, in somewhere in the 1880s, there's a newspaper article in the Cape Times. At that time, the newspaper article said that Cape Town is going to bury itself in horse dung because of all the horses that was operating and in the city center. That, fortunately, by technology, was taken over, and electric trams was introduced by my predecessors in 1896 in Cape Town. And the problem of the horse dung actually went away. But, and this is the important point I'm trying to make, is the company itself in 1896 could not make the change to electricity if the playing field and the environment was not created by the then Cape Colony government. So a company can only operate within that environment. And I think as bus operators, we operate within a specific environment. We haven't done ourselves a lot of good in years gone by. I think we made a lot of mistakes in the taxi industry started to develop and really acted in completely the wrong way. That is absolutely true. I think that a situation has developed where in today in South Africa we have train services, we have bus services, and we have taxi services, and let's not forget the private car, which is the ultimate goal, I think, of many South Africans to actually go. Within those modes that exist, and Professor Jackie touched on that a number of times, we need a national transport policy where every single mode, the rules are set for that mode to provide the mobility for the people of South Africa. And once that is on the table, and once the role players, including the taxi guys, understand that, I think we will actually have a transport industry that will develop much faster and that will be able to cope with the demand. One of the problems, and let me not talk about that, but maybe just mention that to you. One of the problems is that in certain areas we have demand problems and we have supply problems. In Cape Town, if I can use that as an example, through the silo effect that Professor Jackie was talking about, where at the moment the flavor of the day is BRT, the city of Cape Town has been allowed, with the support of the Department of Transport and Fishery, to spend 4.5 billion rand, 4.5 billion, on a BRT system that, as I speak here today to you, still only operate something like 142 buses. That money, in my view, as a bus operator, should have been spent on the train in Cape Town. We have the best lines that was built many years ago, but if we develop our trains in Cape Town, we can get people from Stellenbosch, we can get people from Paarl, the people from Brackenfell, Tails River, who don't have bus services because they were not recognized bus services prior to 1997, so we're not allowed to operate there. The taxis don't want to operate there because it is not a viable economic solution for them. So the people in those areas, the people in Delft, and are also in a situation where they don't have services. So from an overall point of view, that 4.5 billion rand should have been spent on training Cape Town. And there would have been more people to benefit from public transport that is benefiting of the minute number of people that use the BRT from Bloemfontein into the city. So, I really have this passion for transport, and I really have a passion, I think, as an industry, we have a passion for people. And the one thing that I would really, and that's my last comment, the one thing I would really want to leave with the portfolio committee, is that the one thing that people forget about is the passenger, the commuter. Those are the important people that we must always think about. And the question must always be, what are we doing to benefit the passenger? What are we doing to make their lives easier? I just want to quote one last. Is we did a survey in Cape Town of our passengers in 2012. More than 60% of the passengers that use Golden Arrow buses earn less than 3,000 rand a month. The bus tickets in Cape Town, if you buy a weekly Golden Arrow bus ticket from a place like Khayelitsha to town, which large numbers of people, would be in the region of about 100 rand a week. Now, if you look at that and you just project that, those people at that salary level are spending more than 10% of their income just to get work. At the time of the 3 weeks that we had the spike, pay 100 rand a week increased to something like 300 rand a week, and it is not sustainable. So we need to, number one, have the overall plan. We need to understand that the passenger, the commuter, is the important one. And to get there, I think there's a couple of things that we can do, and we have touched on that. And I'm sorry that I shook my head at your remarks here. I'm sorry about that.
Thank you. Thank you for your for your comments. Body language is something that you can't control. Because it happens because of how you feel and how you think at that particular time. You may not even notice that you are communicating by your body language, which is what happens with you. So it's a good thing, because without training your head, one who is sharing a meeting can easily identify that you are talking. And that's why I gave you an opportunity to speak, because you were talking. There are two important issues that you have raised. One of them is that companies cannot create the situation. And I'm not asking the company to create any situation. The government has created a situation to introduce that development plan. And I'm saying your solution must be to the national development plan, because that has been approved. Everybody is saying the national development plan is the correct document. It has been to be implemented. And all that I'm saying is that define the nature of your business within in the context of the national development plan. That is point number. Point number two, I will say there is a transport master plan. The national development plan takes us to 2030. And I am saying, in the proposal that you are making, you are looking at yourself now. You are not looking at yourself from now to 2030. And I'm asking you to. There is also a transport master plan. There has been two drafts. And the transport master plan takes this country to 2050 in terms of transport. And I'm saying familiarize yourselves with that document, so that in the solution that you are proposing and repositioning yourself, you also speak to that, because we are finding long-term solutions. We are not finding short-term solutions. So don't only propose solutions that fit to you as the situation is today. Propose solutions, yes, and the short-term intervention that speak to the current conditions. But then look at yourself and say, where shall we be if these are the changes that are going to be taking place in South Africa? Where shall the bus operators be? Where will they be in this change? And what solution then shall we propose? Number four is, this government is different from the previous government. A democratic government is a government that takes people's views. And makes policies that relates to those views. It's not like the previous government that came with policies, and then you have to find your space within a policy that you have not made any contribution to. That is the difference. So government can create conditions in that way, that it is a democratic government that takes people's views into consideration in order to develop government policies. And I'm saying do that, so that we can be in a position of the developing policies that are speaking to your view.
Yes. I'm talking like a little lame man. I appreciate the chair, you know, the chair on what you're saying. But my personal view and my expectation is
whether the industry which is building the economy as at today and previously. And I would say this golden egg is collapsing. My expectation to this committee is, and my proposal, I'm limiting in terms. I'm speaking like a layman. I'm saying, let's have an interim arrangement. Let us meet our escalation in terms of the contract. We can say for 3 years, for 2 years, so that we should not destroy what we have until we phase out our good plans. Because crop has different policies, white papers, green papers, red papers, call them what you call them. But in the meantime, let us not destroy what we have. We must sustain them, because what we are having now is we are going to lose completely. You know, if we leave everything to be destroyed, there will never be a problem. We can say, like, we refer to contracts, we extend it month to month. We can say, now operators will have a contract for 3 years because we are facing in this new system. But we'll escalate in terms of the contract so that it's safe and sufficient. If we go into guarantees or whatever changes we want to bring, but in the meantime, what we have is saved until we come up with a new solution. Because my point at present is we're destroying everything. Because one day we won't be able to be transporting other people, our commuters to work. The way situation is so serious. That's my peace of mind. Because I don't want to think further than 3 years old, because there are principles, there are laws, there are everything that changes. But let us change something which is going to help us in the interim to go forward. That's all my thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think just to consolidate what Professor Walters was saying, the question by the Honourable Member who identified himself as a member from the opposition, if government changed the funding model and it refers to sharing the kids and state and getting into another mode and etc. I think that's the concept of an IPTN. Now, the IPTN to me really it remains a vision because up to now now that I've been interacting with the system of public transport, there is no one who can give me a realistic horizon where at a certain point in time a certain integration, as actually what the vision is going to materialize. And it also brings around the question of its viability, given the arrangements, the settlements that are there of people and of industry and all commercial activities that are characteristic of South Africa. There's a major question, because one cannot start thinking about Joburg in a manner, or Cape Town, or any one of the cities in a manner that is similar as to think about New York or London or Moscow, because the arrangements there are different. We don't have a Hammond's crowd that is 100 kilometers from the intersection of N1 and N3. It's not the densities that one would find in a settlement that is not sprawling out like those. So those things are very, very much a reality. And what is real also is that that is going to be with us for decades, I think. I don't think that is going to change very, very, very soon. And the solutions have got to talk to when it comes to the NDP itself. There are so many questions around the NDP and their dependencies on education, especially on development of infrastructure, of dealing with all these other things that relate to a development of a country. So it's good to dream because we work towards that dream, but this is a very way into the future. Our Christmas present for next year, what would you like to hear? Look, irrespective of the integration, what an operator in a business would want to see is a simple thing. We would have given this model that we have. It's a situation where we are afforded a level of revenue that would be commensurate with the major drivers of our cost, which says we have to have a margin above the cost, and that has got to allow us to capitalize as and when buses actually they come to the end of their economic life. Now, there's no certainty around whether it's 10 years or it's 15 years. If it's 10 years, one has got to have a revenue that would allow capitalization at a rate of 10%, is it? Yeah, per annum, of the size of the fleet. And if you go to 16, it will give you something like 7% of the size of the fleet. I think you can push your bus up to 15 years and the kilometers, and that's one of the variables. The other thing is that the second president, it's not about 2 minutes, it's one best resource. The second president would be to consider the term of the contracts, because that talks very much to the decision to capitalize, and the main capitalizer being a bus. So I would like to see a contract where Mabaz, until it comes to its economic life, it has a contract, it's working. So we would like to see contracts that are somewhere 10 to 15 years, really, which talk to helping the businesses to take decisions. Perhaps I'd like to thank you for challenging us also to think as a not as a TI, to think as a bus operator in the industry. Maybe we should buy petrol together, we should buy bus together, I don't know, but thank you, we'll think about it. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chairperson. I want to make three proposals, and the committee can decide they don't agree with me or they do agree with me, whatever. Chairperson, you could guide us. I think the best thing we can do under the circumstances is to make recommendations to the Department of Transport as the committee. And I want to see three, and if you don't agree, I'm happy to entertain other alternatives. But my suggestions are, number one, we recommend to the Department of Transport that they discuss with Treasury the issue of, let's say, 3-year contracts, or that they review the contracts with a view to creating 3-year contracts for bus operators in South Africa across all the provinces. And that the review is necessary because of two things. The first one is Census 2011 shows that people have moved. The second reason is that there has been no new bus route approved by the DOT and Treasury for 17 years, if I'm correct. Yeah, everybody's nodding. So those are the two reasons. We asked the Department of Transport to negotiate with Treasury and the bus industry 3-year contracts, looking at reviewing the current contracts with new 3-year contracts because of the fact that we haven't had any changes for 17 years and the 2011 census shows that people have moved radically. The second proposal is that they seek with Treasury to harmonize pieces, if you like, to inflation factors. And I mean, I'm not going to describe the detail, that's for the department to investigate. And the third proposal connects to the first one. The third proposal is that in those 3 years, they then harmonize the bus contracts with the National Transport Master Plan. Because that means that we're giving a 3-year window. So for 3 years, the bus companies have certainty they can invest in new buses and so on for 3 years. But the 3 years is a line in the sand which says that the department in those 3 years must harmonize the contracts, create new contracts that fit with that master plan. Because that is a chance for 2 reviews. The first review is immediate, to immediately get contracts that last for 3 years that take into account the fact that we need new routes and that the pricing system has changed. And secondly, that within those 3 years you must then sort out the fact that the bus contracts don't harm enough with any national transport plan, that they're just historical. I'm happy to hear alternatives, but I'm making 3 concrete proposals so that we don't sort of go around in circles, and if anybody doesn't like them, please suggest improvements on them. But those are my 3 proposals as a result of listening today to these presentations.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not going to agree, neither will I disagree, until such time that we meet the department so that we get the information all from the blue, this is a one-side presentation. As people who are signing the contracts 1 month, 2 months, we need to get a story. Why this kind of an arrangement that compromises one way or another the bus operators, so that once we are cleared, surely as the COVID will have to rise to that operation. It's just that we need to maybe to put pressure or time frames to ourselves in the department to meet as speedily as possible, so that this matter is not a protracted matter, so that tomorrow we are also in this book to say we consulted the committee, but to no movement. Either way, we have to come to go back to this aspect. So I'm saying we need to take a step further to the department to get that side of the story. Now that a comprehensive presentation is made by the bus operators, in fact, we will not take it from only these ones. We will also have to take 1 step backward or 2 step forward in what is being presented. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I was also going to say that in my concluding remarks that we have listened to the bus operator. We have not heard the side of the story of the Department of Transport. And there is no decision that we can arrive at having not given the Department of Transport an opportunity to put their side of the story. And what I would like the department to explain when they present it to us is to give us the reasons for the Department of Transport to handle the issue of contracts in the manner they have. What informed that that approach? In view of the fact that the contracts are longer than 17 years, and for 11 years, the department has operated month-to-month contracts, resulting with uncertainty on the operator in terms of investment. You can't buy a new bus and invest if you don't know how long your contract will last for. And also, come and explain to us what informed that 11 years of month to month, because I don't think that it is in line with the PFNA.
and also the department would need to kind of explain why for 13 years there has been no extension, no expansion in terms of the kilometers covered by the subsidy, when the operators themselves are covering a longer distance. But that is what we will need from the department. However, I think when we are talking about, I take the points that have been made by the last two gentlemen in relation to the to uncertainty and the interim arrangement. I think we would not want to see a situation where there is total collapse in the industry. And in finding the solutions, then we will need to find an interim arrangement to say what is it that has been done, why we are finding a lasting solution to the problem. I'm saying it will be an interim arrangement because we are the only people that have subsidized from the people that have come forward. The taxi industry has said we are not subsidizing. Yet they are the biggest and the largest transporter. We are number two. Then there are small bus operators who are not part of SABOA who have also come forward to say they are also not subsidizing. And there are those who are operating the scholar transport who are saying, as much as we would have contracts on scholar transport, what we are being paid doesn't take us anywhere. And they are even complaining about the road infrastructure under which they operate, which destroys the vehicles. Yet, what they are paid in those contracts in their terms is peanuts. I'm then saying it will be an interim arrangement that speaks to you. It will be an interim solution that speaks to the immediate needs of yourself whilst we are looking at the lasting solution of subsidizing transport in South Africa in line with the constitution of the country. Because if there are operators who are not subsidized at all, it means that we are not operating according to the constitution of this country, because there are those operators who are subsidized and those who are not subsidized, and resulting with a discrimination of those that are not subsidized. And that is what they have said. They have said, we see ourselves being excluded in the subsidies and discriminated against. Yet we are providing the same service. What we are providing is we are taking the public from point A to point B. And if there are operators who are subsidized for doing that, we should all be subsidized. That is what they have said. But I want to take this issue to a broader level, to the integrated transport system. We have had in front of us operators of low fare airlines, low fare airlines, who in their mind are targeting low income people to access aviation type of aviation mode of transport, again in line with the constitution of this country. But we have not seen the reflection of the racial demographics. When you move into a flight, you don't see that those racial demographics of the country. You don't see many black people, colored and Indian, in flight. Because aviation is still a preserve of a particular class within the society. There is no universal access. And we are saying
for us to open all modes of transport, we then need to look at the issue of class division within the society. And then look at the cost. Because if an airline aviation is not subsidized, to allow a situation where even one case or Zalamin ever Ukraine Ipano, we will not be then opening universal access to all modes of transport. That's what I was referring to, Mangiti. Let's think out of the box. It is a worrying matter to us that the low fare airlines have all collapsed in South Africa. But also, it is a worrying matter that even those that were operating were not seeing the passenger makeup that reflects the racial demographics of this country. A student would pay the same ticket, the same amount of fare with the person who is working. A pensioner would pay the same amount of fare with the person who is working. A disabled person would pay the same amount of fare. Then we need to look at that in line with the constitution. So I am saying those are complex issues that we need to discuss when we are dealing with these issues. If we increase the subsidy, when the tech industry has come in front of us and said we are not subsidized and we have not responded to that, when they think that we are providing a solution and maybe we are creating more conflict. So the proposal there, also in our view, at the ANC that has in this portfolio committee, is that the government has an obligation to the commuter, not the service provider. Which is why the issue of the single ticketing system would come in. Because it would subsidize the commuter and the commuter would have a choice of the mode of transport they want to use. And also it would be good because we would be speaking to the voter. And I was worried in the presentation that the consultations that we made actually did not talk of how the commuter organizations and the community-based organizations were conducted in the process. I'm president of the South African National Civics Organization. We never consulted on this. The South African Communities Organization is an associate of the South African National Civics Organization. They were also not consulted. And they are also talking about the issue of subsidies, commuter subsidies, not bus subsidies, commuter subsidies. And in Zambia, we are talking about commuter subsidy because we think that the government has got an obligation to the commuter, not to the operator. And then the commuter can have a right of choosing which mode of transport they want. So that at the end of the day, the quality of service given to the commuter will also begin to respect the commuter. I don't know whether you are catching me on this one. If I am able, I am given a weapon to hold my ticket and choose the best operator in terms of transport. Take this ticket, and if the taxi industry respects me as a commuter and not open a radio loudly and not stop, not refuse to stop when I want to alight from the table, they will know that I am not forced to go to them because the money comes to them. The money comes to my ticket and I can choose to use the train with density, or I can choose to use the bus. The same would apply to all service providers. They will not keep people waiting to get into a bus for more than 4 hours because they know which subsidy is a bona, i.e. the commuter, and the commuter is the name in the respected. Whereas the government has got a responsibility to the public of the country. So I am saying here, we are beginning to display what each party thinks about and which organizations also support the views of different political parties. So the issue of the single ticket system, and also a subsidy that goes to the commuter. And you will also say how you feel about it. I think that we will need a further engagement. The first engagement that we are going to allow the department to come back and present to us, and when they are presented, we will invite you again. The second step will be a further engagement where we bring everybody under one roof. When I say everybody, I mean the taxi industry, which is the largest transporter, SABOA, which is the second largest transporter, the small bus operators, which are the third transporter, the independent small bus operator, they also have their own association, the commuter organization, ISACO, the independent commuters for community organizations, what we shall be discussing in that meeting is how the problem of subsidies and non-subsidies affects each of the role players and the stakeholders. The stakeholder here is the commuter, the government. The role player, my transporters. So we'll be, on that meeting, we'll be then listening to how the issue of subsidy affects the stakeholder, the commuter, and how it affects the role player, the transporter. In that meeting, we will also have the Department of Transport and the Department of Treasury, the second follow-up meeting will be where we will get the Department of Transport to present the National Transport Department and the Integrated Transport System, which is unfolding in South Africa, so that you can begin then to locate yourselves in the future. We will also deal with the subsidized contracts so as to find an interim solution. We are hoping that we will have this meeting before the end of this year so that we can find solutions to these questions before we go into elections. And then we can also write a legacy report for the 5th Parliament to continue working on the long-term solutions to the problem. I think that's how we move forward in dealing with this issue. I will give an opportunity for anyone who wants to comment before I close the meeting.
Honourable Sok. I think we just want to say we endorse the way forward. Listen to it, and surely we'll also ourselves as a committee analyze the presentation. We saw the certain gaps that maybe we did not touch on, which are very critical to represent us. I think we'll abide by the way forward, and I think someone has made this presentation. And surely the Department of Transport is listening very attentively. They've got a role to play on the whole matter. Thank you, Chair.
A report from the proposed way forward.
Madam Chair, I think we support your way forward. There's a lot of work to be done.
I would like to have this matter followed up before.